government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this May the 25th on the West Coast, now May the 26th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, it's Happy Memorial Day to those of you who celebrate this day. I was thinking of the word a couple of days ago, and it hit me kind of strange. It was like, me, more, I, all. It's four words that make up that word memorial, and we tend to just think about ourselves during that day. So we want to dedicate tonight's show to all the members of the armed forces from the United States throughout the world, regardless of what we feel their job is. We know that if they're protecting our country, they're doing their job. And certainly our hearts and our thoughts and prayers go out to all of those who are in harm's way, as well as those who have passed on. And that's about all I can say about it right now. Since we're on a holiday here, there hasn't been any worthy or worthwhile news to come out over the mainstream media. But then again, is there ever any worthwhile news? But we're going to talk about things in a general sense with tonight's guest. He has been on the show a number of times now, and he's back by popular demand. I love having him back because we get to pick his legal mind and lean on his experience, many years of experience. He is an antitrust and a constitutional rights or civil rights attorney, and he hails from New York. He's my good friend, Mr. Carl Pearson. Carl, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Don, thank you very much. I was all set to say something about newspapers and what they deserve.
Well, be my guest. That's why you're on the show. Okay. Speak your mind.
actually, the newspapers are going out of business, and why shouldn't an institution go out of business when it no longer serves the people? I mean, They just don't report the valid news, the news that people need and the things that are useful to them. And instead, the newspapers just carry crap. And why should we pay for it? So
yes.
People are probably not buying newspapers, and advertising, therefore, is not coming in as it used to. And the newspapers are sinking into total irrelevance, and they're going out of business. And it's really unfortunate, but it also would seem like there is a market for newspapers that would tell what the people want to hear and what they need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody would go out there, you would think that they could make money, but probably it would have to be without advertising. It would probably have to be where the subscriptions paid for the cost of the newspapers, so they wouldn't have to worry about offending advertisers.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting because I write for a newspaper, and they're doing well, the Idaho Observer. They print the truth.
Well, that's important. I mean, when newspapers print the truth, you would hope that there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm. I think the propagandists underestimated the people that use the Internet. You see, there's a very simple dot or series of dots that can be connected. When you look at the people that read the newspaper, first of all, you're talking about someone that at least is interested in seeing what is being said about what's occurring throughout the world. And those same people read when they go online, when they're using a computer. And so they have a tendency, when they read a newspaper, to go out there and see if they can find out what others are reporting about a particular piece they may have read in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or, you know, whatever paper, Boston Globe, Cleveland Press, Chicago Sun-Times, L.A. Times. It doesn't really matter. They're putting out the same drivel on all of those papers, or in all of those papers, and they're following this propaganda slant, not reporting the truth, not telling people what's really going on, and so you're describing the after effects of not fulfilling that desire that people have for honest information or accurate information. And I think they underestimated their readership, definitely. Now, are they in line for bailouts here, or are they actually going to go out of business?
Well, that's an interesting concept. In past legislation, monies that were available for helping small business were specifically not available for media-type companies. They didn't want to be putting federal money into, news sources. So I'm not sure whether there will be monies made available to them, but I guess the newspapers are companies that know how to take care of themselves, and I guess they'll create a demand by just publicizing the fact that the newspapers need to be bailed out, and maybe there will be money. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets money except the people.
Yes. Well, I've noticed that online, many, you know, I may be researching a particular topic, and I end up on a newspaper's online catalog, and of course they want to put two sentences up there and then charge me for what somebody said, and I find it rather stupid, actually, to pay for propaganda. So,
you know, the newspapers are really in their death watch right now, and they're desperately seeking a model that works, and one model is trying to charge for information. Another one, I suppose, is going to be trying to take advantage of Kindle. You've heard about Kindle, the machine that will allow people to download newspapers, magazines, and books while they're in a bus or driving or walking, riding, or doing anything. But it's a portable reader for the print media, and it allows downloading through broadband. It has that capability where you can download a book as you're going somewhere. You can download it, and you can download a newspaper. So the interesting thing there, which I've read, is that Amazon seems to have the monopoly there, and it's only through Amazon that the newspapers are going to be deriving a source of revenue, so that Ambook is going to make most of the newspaper revenue, and the newspapers are complaining that there's not going to be much revenue for them through Kindle.
Well, there are only, six people that they have to talk to straighten that issue out as far as money for the papers. You know, just for the listening audience, we're talking about ownership.
Yeah.
You know, when they own all the papers, obviously, the intent was to control the media, control what was said, control the information that was available to people. And people began, no pun intended, reading between the lines. And And as a result now, like you said, if the advertisers aren't selling, and they can only sell if people are buying the paper itself, they're not going to support it. So that's part of the problem. But then again, half of those advertisers are out of business too, aren't they?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You're talking about electronics companies, and I'm sure just about everything under the sun. If they're closing down chain stores in malls and shopping centers, or many of the industries that support those businesses, or at least supply those businesses, then they're going to be it's a dire situation. That's part of what I wanted to talk about tonight, too, from a legal sense. But I wanted you to share anything else that's on your mind about what's going on these days.
Well, I worry about it every day, and I think quite a lot about it. I have a series of videos that I've been putting on the air, trying to go into a variety of topics that really need to be addressed. There's so many. It's just what's happening in the country is not good, and it's not going to be over rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
People are, because it, like when businesses ramp up and they expand, we're now in a contraction that can keep going for a long period of time. Because I mean, it's hard to understand every factor in this. But if you don't have people buying, if you don't have people making money, if you have people in a service economy getting $8 an hour, there's not enough money around to support the country the way it used to be when we had jobs that paid $30-$40 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We have new jobs at $8 an hour. You look around and they brag that we offer you $9 an hour if you work midnight shift. You can't raise a family on $9 an hour. And the people that did this to us, the companies that and their willing politicians that allowed these jobs, encouraged the jobs, financed the movement of the jobs to other countries. We spent taxpayer money to move jobs to other countries, to give support while people move their plants elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there's no responsibility. We no longer have any ability to pay back by firing the people, by not reelecting them. Reelection is automatic generally when you're in office. Because you can't raise the money, and you can't get on the ballot. As I tried myself to run for Attorney General back in the year 2006, I saw what the problems were firsthand. Trying to get on a ballot, trying to get signatures. They give you 43 days in which to get 30,000 signatures in 43 days. You can't unless you have an army.
Mm-hmm.
It's just difficult to try to do that.
And well, there's a double speak going on across the board, pretty much, and I'm sure you'd agree. I mean, you and I have talked about this on many shows, and recently I've had several interesting guests on the show who are in the throes of understanding what is actually legal and what is actually going on. I myself have done a bit of research. You'll be surprised at some of the things I've learned. And I've been able to narrow this down, this problem that you're describing. You know, it's really been the history of the United States of America. And I'm speaking about the Republic. It's been a problem more in more recent times. You know, 250 years is a lot for people to grasp, and of course I'm rounding the number off, but when if you were to go back to, let's say, 1930, around 1930, already this country was known to be on the verge, or for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. In 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt actually secretly declared bankruptcy. And I say secretly because it wasn't made known to the people that that was the case. I'm sure some select politicians knew about it. It's probably what got John Traficant thrown in jail a number of years ago. And he talked about this very same thing. There have been several politicians, congressmen or senators, who have brought up the issue publicly, and of course they're no longer around for having done that. But some of us have more courage. See, we haven't been bribed, and we are looking at this from the legal standpoint. Now, there were two things that Roosevelt did, and I'd like you to comment on this.
Mm-hmm.
The first was the bankruptcy, and basically taking all the gold away from the people, making it a crime to possess or to be holding gold. Unless you had a good hiding place for it, you turned it in, or you faced potential fines and imprisonment. To me, that does not sound like a sound currency. But the intention was to take over this country, which is what's going on right now in real time. And it has been since that time. For all intents and purposes, it already happened in 1933. The second thing that Roosevelt did was declared that all the laws that were created were going to be under public policy. These were going to be public policy decisions, meaning the public would bear the expense of whatever the government felt it needed, it required in terms of money. And it got so brazen that they would just make the money and just say, oh, the people will pay for it, with, you know, assign it to this state or this portion of the country or the whole country. Just assign it to these citizens, even the unborn. And that's what we're looking at right now today. Now, in light of that, in respect to that, this is a two-party contract between those operating as the government and foreign parties, foreign entities. And we are not parties to that contract. It would be as if I signed a deal to buy a car or a boat or a house, and then I came and said, Carl, you know, I'm having trouble paying for this. You're going to have to contribute part of your paycheck to help me make this expense, meet this expense. And you're going to say, wait a minute, I had nothing to do with that. I mean, we're friends, but that's a bit presumptuous for you to assume that I'm going to pay. And I'll say, well, you have to. You know, there's a law that's been created. Whether you're aware of it or not, you have to. That's what's being done to us, basically. I'm being very general. I could be more specific. But we have this fourth branch of government that they didn't teach us about in school, and that's the administrative branch. And the corporate United States is actually part of an international implied irrevocable charitable trust. It's an implied trust. It's not even real. And so we have government records destroyed, financial transactions occurring as off balance sheet transactions, offshore accounts, you name it. And it's all for the benefit of the corporate body. That's the key to it. And that's why we see what we're seeing today. Now, I'll shut up and I'll allow you to comment on that.
Well, I think you can even be more specific. And as I see it, I see that the banks seem to be able to get most of the money, and they have done most of the damage, and they have most of the profits. That they take out huge amounts of money. They probably are involved in laundering drug money and other illegal transactions throughout the world. And I think the banks are really, because they create money. Money runs through them. They create money. It's just a place where you would suspect there's a lot of skullduggery going on. And just imagine the same group of people that got us into trouble are the ones who are continuing with this problem. They've retained the same people to try to deal with the problem that, that these people created. So it doesn't look good at all.
No, it's obviously it's the banks, but what we're witnessing too is organized crime. These banks are breaking every law. In other words, they're above the law. There is no law that, that they have to answer to. They're irreproachable. And in that sense, so is the government, unless, and it could be Congress, for just as an example. You know, a representative at the House can actually abide by the law, but go against the grain of what this this corporate crime spree or criminal enterprise wants done, and then that's when they out them for something. They set them up to be an example to the rest, to not step out of line.
It's easy to do. When you have all the money in the world and you have people at your beck and call. I mean, imagine if you have, I mean, I don't know what the banks have, $100 trillion or something, more or less, I'm guessing, but with $100 trillion of assets and the ability to generate as many as much more as they want, it's nothing to hand out a million or half a million or 10 billion. It's nothing. They don't miss it. And you could buy probably every senator and congressman in the country for $10 billion.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, the campaigns don't cost that much.
Yeah.
So they are in fact bought for that.
Well, they're making that money out of thin air too.
Yeah.
So they're not actually giving them gold or silver, maybe in extreme cases. And then we have this pattern of people that work in the banks. They end up working for these brokerage firms or, you know, the bigger ones which have become banks, Goldman Sachs. Why do we have to have a succession of Treasury secretaries who are graduates of Goldman Sachs? Why is that?
Let me go down a little path for a few seconds here.
Sure.
And that is that we see more and more that there is excessive compensation that's being given by the major corporations, including particularly the investment banking houses, and I suppose the banks themselves are giving excessive compensation, especially when they can't tell the difference between what's investment banking and what's commercial banking. They probably have huge amounts of compensation being paid. Now, is that good or bad to have that?
Well, that depends on whether or not it's honest, for one thing. I mean, if it's moving people or kicking people out of their homes, taking jobs away, running the economy into the ground.
If we can take the dishonest compensation away from those people, is that going to solve any problems?
I don't think so. No,
because here's the analysis that I go through. When you have somebody earning $20 or $30, $40 million a year. And in the investment banking industry, they may have 1,000 people or 10,000 people earning that kind of money. Supposing that they're limited so that they can only earn $1 million a year, and then you have $30 or $40 billion that remain within the corporation, they've still stolen that $30 or $40 billion from the people. And the mere fact that you limit the compensation of human beings doesn't prevent the theft from the public, because it still is going to continue. So that it's only a palliative for the people to focus upon excessive compensation. The problem is the excessive profitability of the companies themselves. We have to deal with that. They shouldn't be allowed to make excessive compensation, excessive profits.
Yeah.
That's
where the real problem
yeah. is. Yeah.
I mean, that's the inherent problem in the fiat money system and usury credit.
Yeah.
You cannot create wealth out of debt for those who are taking on the debt. And especially when they're hoodwinked and misled into the reality of that debt that they're taking. You know, if I come to you and I say, Carl, may I borrow $1,000? And you say, yes, I'm going to charge you 10% interest over a particular period of time. Okay, whatever that agreement is. Okay, so I should expect to pay $1,100 when I return the money, if I return it within that period of time. That's a simple matter. But they have to couch it in increments or, spread it over time, like open-ended credit cards, for example, you know, where the interest is building and building and building, and the principal is very small, and the interest is thousands of times what the principal is. That, to me, should be stopped. Now, also, I think, in light of what I see being put out, you know, through the media, you have some TV broadcasters that make a half an hour appearance. Now, they may have to spend a little bit of time practicing reading their cue cards or their teleprompter, and they may occasionally go out and do a story, or they might sit in on a meeting. But you talk about actually being in front of the camera for a half an hour, or in a week, 2.5 hours total. Does that warrant a $50 million salary? Or $25 million? Does it even warrant $1 million?
That's the star system. We have allowed a star system to exist because we finance a single stadium in the area with public money. We give a monopoly thereby to the people that own the team. The team can then charge $1,000 per seat per game.
Yes.
And they can attract the best players in the world with $50 million a year salary. But it's not right. I mean, there's a lot of things that are wrong with monopolies, and that's basically my field of antitrust, that we have created monopolies all over the place. And when you have a monopoly, you have basically another form of usury. So that when you have the banks that are permitted to charge usurious rates, you know how that happened, by the way? We have in the country, we have this constitutional concept of interstate commerce, and that you can't mess around with it. You've got to allow interstate commerce. One state can't stop the flow of interstate commerce. So Delaware and South Dakota set up laws that would attract the banks and credit card companies by being permissive insofar as usury is concerned. Any rate of interest is okay with Delaware and South Dakota. So the banks then started charging 30% interest on their credit cards. And the Supreme Court held that when a credit card company in South Dakota has a customer in Minnesota and charges 30%, even if Minnesota's law of usury would say it's usurious, Minnesota is not allowed to do anything about it. So their residents in Minnesota have to pay that usurious rate of interest. The thing that I see right now, which would be just desserts, is that when the banks and their usurious rates of interest that they're charging for homes, on home loans, when those loans go bad, there are two different types of laws in the country. One of them is called a judicial foreclosure law, and that's where a bank has to go into court and file a complaint and say that the homeowner failed to pay the mortgage and we want permission to sell the property and repay the loan. In states like New York, it takes 2 years for that process to go through. When you defend the action, you can sit in your home for 2 years without paying your mortgage. In California, it works a little bit differently, and that's called a non-judicial foreclosure state. There, the bank hires a blue pickup truck and puts in a group of people in the back of the truck with signs and hammers. And when they see a house that they're going to foreclose on, a guy hops out of the back of the truck and taps a sign into the lawn, and that's your foreclosure. They then sell the property about 3 weeks later, and they evict the tenant because the bank now owns the property or someone else owns it. So it happens very quickly in the non-judicial states. Now, under federal law, we can't control the rate of interest that these banks located in South Dakota charge on the home loans that they give in Minnesota, for example. But wouldn't it be just and fitting to have every non-judicial state pass laws that require a bank to go into court for a foreclosure and thereby slow down the bank for that 2 year period to allow the people in that state to remain in the home for a couple of years without paying the mortgage, and in doing so they extract a significant equity out of the property while they're waiting to be thrown out of their own homes?
Yeah,
that's a state bailout program for homeowners that is nothing but a big plus for the state residents and for the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to leave more money in the state than it's going to take out.
Now, you could assume that the banks will fight that.
Have as much clout at the state level because they stole it all. They no longer needed the clout at the state level. It became a federal matter where they got all the usury they wanted. And now, mm-hmm. at the state level, you can have a reaction to that by blocking them from enforcing the usury by setting up a state statute of foreclosure that'll take 2 years. It's only just desserts, and the states ought to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it boils down to how corrupt any particular state is, and that government, and the people running it. It always boils down to people, doesn't it?
It does. You know, we've got to do something at the local level. I think that's where our opportunities exist, is to try to bring justice and opportunity to the lowest portion of government, at the smallest level, the town and village, and create reforms there and create something different for the people where they can actually see improvement, and improvement that's not going to come at federal help or at federal expense. It's going to, mm-hmm. be in spite of federal help. Federal, mm-hmm. help is negative. Federal expense doesn't go to the people. It goes to somewhere else, but not to the people. They give billions or hundreds of billions of dollars away to foreign banks and nothing to the people.
Yes.
You know what this mortgage foreclosure problem is with the toxic mortgages? The federal government is having people buy these mortgages, the toxic mortgages, to take them off the books of the banks. Who do you think these buyers of the toxic mortgages are, and what money are they using to do this with?
Well, they're corporations, and from what I know, most of them are foreign corporations.
I think the vulture funds, the banks, pools of investors.
Yeah.
And they're using federal bailout money.
Well, yeah, of course.
And they're buying these toxic mortgages. A toxic mortgage is no more than somebody that has a home where the home is underwater, that the homeowner owes more than the property is worth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lost his job. That's a toxic mortgage. These mortgages are being sold, and they're being sold as at 6 to 1. The package suggested that they can make 6 times on their money by buying these. How does one make money on buying a toxic mortgage for 6 cents on the dollar? Take a guess. By filing a lawsuit, a foreclosure lawsuit against the homeowner, and taking over the property. So what kind of relief is that for the homeowner? None.
Yeah.
There isn't any relief for the homeowner. Our program is not to relieve the homeowner. It's to take his property away. The banks are hoarding their money that they got. Why? So they can buy up these properties at 6 cents on the dollar.
Yes, and in the case of international banking or governments that are owed substantial amounts of money, they are appeasing them by trying to give them these mortgages. And this ties in with derivatives and hedge funds.
Oh, yeah.
Bonds is a big issue. Bonding these contracts between the mortgage companies and the banks and the brokerage firms is huge. I found something in my research looking into Countrywide. And I don't think I was supposed to find this. I think I found it just because of the sleuth that I am. I found roughly, I'm rounding it off, roughly about 6,000 bond companies around the nation in one database document that's on the Internet. I wasn't supposed to find it, but it was because I was down that rabbit hole, you know, and I worked the search terms until I found what I was looking for. I didn't expect to find that document, but I expected to find names of companies, and that's exactly what's there. And the terms of their agreements, in other words, how long they've been working with Countrywide. So this is a very interesting piece of information I found. I wonder if the company or employees with the company themselves know that this exists. Mm. That's how interesting it is. But I wanted to shift gears in a sense, not leaving this topic, but mention a word that came up in my studies, because I think this is the word that they're using to create the laws to pull off all these scams. The word reification. The word reification would describe what's going on, and that word basically means to make something which is abstract more concrete or real. In other words, the laws that they're creating are implying that something is so, even though it's not. And again, that word reification is used in the law. Do you have any comments about that?
How do you spell that? Spell that word for me.
R-E-I-F-I-C-A-T-I-O-N.
I've never heard that word before, never seen it or heard it.
Reification, yes. Now, this is because I'm going through laws and titles and clauses, all the different sections and the subtitles and clauses, to look at the actual status of the average American who is not party to any of these agreements. The fact that these things are implied as law. Having a social security number is implied. And they use reification by creating penalties for not having that number. You see, that's how all this has been done. And the IRS is the same, and the Federal Reserve is the same. And bureaucracies, if you want to call them that are just other ways for them to funnel the cash in their direction, just to have it go overseas. Now, the problem is that, you know, you have these 13 Illuminati families that are warring with each other. They're struggling for power. You have the Bush-Clinton cabal, and now it's the Bush-Clinton-Obama cabal. Obama's really working for all of them. They're all working for the Rockefellers. You see, it always comes back to the same people. But the Rockefellers have always been agents for the Rothschilds. So the central banks are at the bottom of all of this. And all of these laws and all of these statutes and codes, it all ties in with the Uniform Commercial Code as well. All of it. It's to serve the corporation through the bankruptcy under public policy. It's over and over you can repeat that theme. And everything they're doing is fitting that. But none of it is legal. This is all illegal. This is what's amazing. You have to forge documents. You have to create fraudulent documents. You have to defraud investors, whether they're investing in real property or investment vehicles. They're stealing everything, and they're using these laws they're creating just to mask it. It's a smokescreen. Now here I am talking to a very competent attorney about this, but I'm convinced that that's what they're doing.
The amount of money that we've seen given away and stolen, it is thousands of times, or maybe even a million times more than we've had any kind of enforcement activity. Enforcement activity seems to take place as long as it's not important. I have, in fact, a case now that is up on appeal, and I'm arguing the case in a few days. Mm-hmm. So my mind is dwelling on, I'm just beginning to think about that now. The thing about the case is that my client was accused of taking a bribe of $75,000 in order to steer people into a stock. And his response to that was no, that money was actually given to him to try to find real estate to invest in. And the individual who gave him the money pleaded guilty already to a crime of manipulating the stock, but he also said that my client actually did receive the money from him to invest in real estate. So even this person who is accused of and convicted and of a crime relating to this says no, that he gave the money to my client to invest in real estate. But the interesting thing is that this happened during the period, this whole trial took place during the period when the economy was collapsing a year ago. And every one of the enforcement officials at the SEC came over to my courtroom to watch a $75,000 case as trillions of dollars were slipping out of the economy without anyone doing any enforcement at all.
Mm-hmm.
The small cases become the big thing. The big ones they can't touch. They're not allowed to touch the real crimes. They have to look around for the $75,000 case. That's what we have. We've always had that. Years ago, I had the commissioner in New York City of Consumer Affairs under oath in her office. And I asked her, I said, why is it that I always seem to see releases from your office, press releases, that talk about you going after a butcher who puts his thumb on the scale, or a bully bill collector who harasses people on the phone? Why is it you don't go after the big corporations that are stealing money left and right all over the place? And she said, you really want me to tell you? You don't want to know. I said, no, please, we're under oath. Tell me. She said, it's very simple. They don't give me enough money. I only have enough money to go after small people. I don't have a budget to go after big companies. If I had that budget, I would go after them.
It's amazing because no one's paying me to do the research I'm doing, and I'm coming up with all kinds of stuff, you know? I mean, it's pretty clear what's going on, who's doing it, and what should happen.
You know what?
That's with no budget, so I don't buy that argument at all.
Do you know what prosecutorial discretion is?
Well, yeah.
It means that the public doesn't have any right to bring a law to bring a criminal proceeding. Only the prosecutor, and he has the discretion not to bring it.
Well, that may be true, but we also have the constitutional right to form citizens' grand juries. Say that three times, real fast. and that's being done. In fact, indictments are being handed down from grand juries across the country right now.
You know what the problem with that is? That you're not going to have any normal jails opened up to take the convicted people. You're not going to have the civilian or military jails and the jailers and the system opened up to the people that you convict. You're going to have indictments, but they won't have teeth. They're publicity. I mean, we had that problem, and I've addressed it already in New York, and that is that we've had the problem in New York and throughout the rest of the country of trying to find out what happened with 9/11. So the popular concept was to have a people's grand jury and to have an indictment. So that means that, let's say, you and I get together, we call ourselves a people's grand jury, and we now bring on and issue an indictment, a piece of paper that says, we hereby indict you, the following people. But that's just a PR release. It doesn't really create an indictment that has a judge and a jury and a building and a jail and marshals and everything like that. You need to have the government apparatus, and there the government has the discretion not to do anything, and that's what they're doing is nothing. The people who control the government control the prosecutorial discretion, so that the real problem is who controls the government. And if you want to know who controls the government, you just see who needs to have, who gives the money to pay for the campaigns. Mm-hmm. So we're back to really the single simple solution to this whole mess has always been that we need to have government financing of political campaigns. And it doesn't take any money. It only takes a statute to require that the broadcast media of television, radio, and because of licensing in the cities, the cable, and also the franking privilege with the post office. And one final thing would be having every board of election gather the email address of every registered voter and make that available to the candidates for free for a certain number of uses. And that will really eliminate the need for money. You don't need money in a campaign. Money, by the way, only goes to the media. So it goes the wrong way. Media should be contributing its broadcast services, but instead they're getting rich in selling it to the candidates, who in turn are getting the money from even richer people, who then buy the prosecutorial discretion. They buy all of that, and it'd be simple. We just need to have government financing of campaigns, and it doesn't really cost anything. Why don't we do that? Well, because the people who are there don't want to put themselves out of office. They like the system. They get reelected all the time.
Well, yeah, but we have to go back, return to this theme of the corruption. I mean, this is nothing but organized crime.
Yeah, but who are you selling that to? The people in power? You're telling them that they're organized crime?
Well, they know that. They don't.
Well, of course.
They don't have to be told that.
Right.
They know that.
Right. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, I have a radio show, and I write about it. That's my.
Well, I have a program that's trying to deal with it, and that is that if I'm offering prosperity to any town or village in the United States that wants it, but it has to be a town somewhere between 5 and maybe 25,000 people. And I was told the other day, I had a long discussion with one of the top newsmen in the country. And after giving him my assistance, I said, can you help me? I said, I'm trying to create prosperity, and I don't want a penny for it. I just want to prove that any town or village can create prosperity. The program is so obviously good, but I can't get anyone to do it. I only have one place, Hopeless, Indiana. And why is it that I can't get publicity? And he said, well, if you can get one town in the country to do this, and if it's successful, I guarantee you that you will have the top publicity in the world. It'll be fantastic. It's a great story. But as it is right now, it's not newsworthy. I said, but that's the problem with the press. That what's newsworthy to the press are what the criminals hand out to them to publish.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't the press looking for ideas and screening them and offering their own selection? And the press that comes up with the best selection probably should become the best press and the winner among the media.
Well,
but we don't do that.
Yeah, it's because they're making more money now than they ever made, if they ever did print the truth or broadcast the truth.
Yeah, they're propped up by people who don't want them to print the truth, and they'll keep advertising as long as they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it comes back to your solution, which is one reason why you're on the show. We're having this discussion so that we understand our role. You see, all of this really is a big script, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a script, and it's,
but you have to know how to work around it. You need workarounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured a workaround. I don't like to deal in theoretical things because
mm-hmm.
you can dodge this for years. If you deal with an idea that you have, that's just, it only requires a constitutional amendment, then everything will be okay. Forget it. You're never going to get it. So don't waste my time talking about a constitutional amendment. You're not going to get it. And they want you to waste your time thinking about that. I devote my time to finding and figuring out a way of making it work. And I've solved the problem. You can create prosperity in a small town. I can't do it in a big city, but I can do it in a small town. And why is it that no small town wants it? I mean, the people that are listening right now, why do you not demand that your town do these four things to create prosperity for you and the other people in the town? Number one, to give you a free college. You can have a low-cost or really a tuition-free college for residents of your town, and it could be set up in 2 months. It's simple. It's all on my website, but you don't need me. I'm only telling you what I figured out, and I've laid it all out for you to look at. You don't even have to call me and tell me that you're doing it. But I would rather be involved. I can make it happen probably better than you can. And I don't want any fee for it. So I can give you a low-cost equivalency college in your town for residents only. We also can set up an attorney general in your town who is a new type of sheriff. And now more than ever, you can see that you need to have somebody in your town that has more than a gun. The sheriff with a gun is passé. You need a sheriff with a law book, somebody who will go into court and stop the people from stealing from you. they are highly sophisticated Wall Street types that are stealing from you. And all you have in these small towns is your little defense of zoning, where you protect your zoning so carefully, and you watch all of the assets of your town being wheelbarrowed out of town by Walmart and the others. You need to have some sophisticated legal help to save your town. I call that the town attorney general. And the town attorney general will bring suit to recover money for the town, and that money in part can be used to give you a free college, can help support health care for people that need some support, reduce taxes, reduce rent, give free broadband, and maybe even some money left over for dental services. That is the town attorney general, the new sheriff in town. You need a person like that. So I will help you train somebody to do the right thing. Thirdly, a payroll administrator in the town that will allow all the small businesses and even households to have payroll administered by a single person with a single insurance policy for workman's comp, a single insurance policy for unemployment, and no audits. And the small businesses can go in and out of payroll as their fortunes get better and worse. And that way, everyone that can afford payroll can be on it, and those that can't afford it can go off for a while. But they never really lose the right to have payroll when they need it, because if you try to do it yourself, you find that you have to stop payroll. It costs too much because you lose your policy. You have to reestablish a policy at great cost. You have to go through an audit. And many people, many small businesses say, it's too much. I'm not going to put up with it. I'm never going to have another employee. And that's killing the economy. But that's exactly what the big companies want. They don't want competition from small business, because small business is better. We know what to do. We instinctively are better and more profitable, and we hire more people. We keep more people at work. And they don't like that. So they create these obstacles to small business in the form of rules and regulations that are too difficult for small business to comply with. So the way I'm complying with that is to have a payroll administrator. Finally, the best idea of all is to bring in $25,000 to $50,000 a year of income per resident in the town who wants money. And that is by having a replacement for the diminishing and lessening, let's say, job marketplace. We have a job marketplace that's no longer going to be what it was. We have fewer and fewer jobs, fewer meaningful jobs. We have to pick up the slack. And everyone knows that small business is the creator of jobs, but no one has figured out how to promote small business, but I have. And the way we need to do it is by a task marketplace where everyone in the town offers tasks in a database, keywords, mow lawns, tutor quantum mechanics, assemble IKEA desk model number 852, $75. And if everyone puts their tasks in this database, the town can then spend money to advertise the database within 25 miles around the town, which is 2,000 square miles. And I expect there'll be $100 or $200 a day of income on the average for the participants. And that's equal to $25,000 to $50,000 a year, and there's no deduction for withholding taxes. Any town where its people are making $50,000 a year does not have unpaid mortgages. They have people wanting to move into town. Property values will go up, and you're going to have prosperity in the town.
Mm-hmm. Now, a question comes to mind, Carl, and you and I talked about this concept of the town attorney general. Would he participate, he or she, because it could be a woman, would that person take up the cause of this mortgage fraud that's going on?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's an attorney general for the town is no more than a lawyer. A lawyer with a hat that says attorney general. There is nothing special about an attorney general. It's just a concept. It's a lawyer who deals more in the Wall Street type cases involving fraud, securities, antitrust, insurance, banking, immigration, civil rights, instead of zoning. The towns have restricted themselves really to what they know. They know zoning. People that are business people buy and sell property based on zoning. They know what the properties are, how they're categorized, and they fight over whether or not zoning is going to be changed. And while they're fighting like that, you have people stealing them blind because you don't have the right kind of sheriff in town. You don't have a legally oriented sheriff. You need that at the local level. At the state level, you have the attorney general, but they're too busy, probably too busy getting paid off so that they don't do anything. But at the lowest level, you have 40,000 towns, villages, and counties in the United States. If you had 40,000 people like me, each operating independently, but having websites and sharing ideas and all that, you would have very quickly a support mechanism for people. For let's say somebody in a town you have in mind would ask other attorneys general, town attorneys general, what would be a good action against the banks? Well, how about let's just try this one on for size. A breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing when they increase your interest by charging $10 a month for maintenance of your card. Just overnight, when it used to be like $25 a year, they suddenly announced to me $10 a month charge. Isn't that a breach of an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing?
Yeah, or, you know, there are other examples, I suppose, we can come up with, because you could be in the bank, open up a checking account, and maybe be assessed a small monthly fee to maintain that account. Anymore, they don't return checks. You have to put in a special request, and then you have to hound them about not having received a copy of your monthly statement. So I suppose that there are other issues regarding the different types of checks.
How about this issue? I'll throw out a big issue now. How about the idea that when a bank is so filled with federal money that it's under control of the federal government, that it now becomes a government agency and the depositors are entitled to due process? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a biggie. That's a real big issue. That the banks, by taking federal money and control, are now government agencies and they have to give due process to their people.
Or just the general information that they release on how they operate. I mean, it's fraudulent compared to what most people think they do. Let's say you go to borrow $100,000 to buy a house, and I'm just using a round figure.
Right.
Okay. And you're told that you're getting this percentage rate of maybe 5%. Okay. Just we're being round figured here,
right.
And over the years of the entitled contract, you are going to pay $300,000. I mean, this is pretty common across the board. People are generally who carry their mortgage out to term pay three times what they originally were borrowing. Now, they're borrowing that money, but there's actually no money being handed over. The bank is not investing this money. The bank used to, under Federal Reserve regulations, had to maintain 10% of that money. So they had to have $10,000 in the bank. Now, the bank will tell you that they make their money loaning their depositors' money to other people. And that may be true, but they're not at all telling anybody how much money they're making on it, or at least who is taking the time to actually figure this out. They're shocked when they find out that they're still paying off interest, that none of this money is going towards the principal. And now the banks only have to have 2,000 or 2% of that money on hand. So where are they getting the other $98,000 that they're loaning you? It's just a ledger entry. It's just an entry in the book. If it's even that, it's probably just on a computer now.
And then they sell the mortgage immediately.
Yes, they sell the mortgage and everything that goes along with it, because there's going to be property taxes. And I mean, sometimes the first payment is worked into the loan itself, and they take that out. Well, they've devised all these different ways. Escrow. The word escrow actually means to scam or to rob. You know, and you put it in an account where it's going to be robbed. Literally, they use that term.
No, years ago, in order to achieve that 10% that they needed in order to be able to lend to a customer, the banks would require a compensating balance to be maintained at the bank of 10%. So they would lend you $200 million, let's say, but you had to keep $20 million on deposit at the bank. And that loan then created the 10% that was needed to legalize the loan. So they really just create loans out of nothing.
Yes. Well, and it was always a minimum of a 10% down, usually 15 or 20 if they could get it from you. But that 10% covered the 10,000 of the 100 that they had to have on hand.
Yeah.
You see? So they didn't put out any money. You put out your money, and then on top of it, you put out another $290,000 on a $100,000 investment.
You know what's happened to the country is this, as I see it. We've had the scams of three things that I see as being usurious. Number one is usury itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we have been issuing so much paper where the interest is mafia type, and instead of being paid to the mafia, it's being paid to the banks. And the reason for the usury laws in the first place was that we know that you can't earn legitimately more than a certain amount when you have capital. So we tried to make the usury laws relate to the economics of a loan and not put people into a position where they can't earn enough money by using the capital in order to pay the interest. The usury cap was designed to prevent that from happening. But we've gone beyond. Instead of 10%, we now have 30, 40, 50. Any amount will do. And that way we become a nation of slaves because we can't get out of debt. So usury is one way. Secondly, we have monopolies. Monopolies are where we charge anything so that when it only costs 3 or 4 cents to make a drug, we might be charged $100 for 1 month's supply. And that's a monopoly where they have monopolistic profits, which once again are comparable to usury. And the third thing are the casinos, the gambling, where they are really little monopolies that have the same thing. They take away far more from the public than they give, and they're usurious in that respect. So with all of these things coming down on the people, the gambling and the monopolies and the usury at the bank level and the credit card level, no wonder the nation is where it is. It cannot survive. It can't pay the VIG. The mafia is taking too much. They've destroyed the economy. We can't sustain this any longer. So we've got to start eliminating monopolies. And, of course, we hear the right thing from Obama that they're going to go after monopolies. They're trying to deal with the VIG at the banks a little bit, but probably not too much. Gambling is another thing. There's just too much. They take too much from the people. It's a very regressive tax when the people are gambling. And all of that just makes them have nothing left to live on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they have the issues amongst themselves, too, as to who's going to pay who. And, you know, the old saying, there's no honor among thieves.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Well, that term reification, you know, I'm going to, I know you'll be back again, hopefully in June,
true,
where we can pick up this conversation and get into some specifics and talk more about hopeless Indiana.
Very good.
I know someone from hopeless Indiana that's supposed to be talking to you, so.
Terrific.
But that term reification was kind of interesting because it basically describes all of what we've been talking about. They take something that doesn't exist and make it appear to be real by creating a whole set of circumstances to try to give it some substance. And once they get people's mindset to comply with this, whether it's right or wrong. And most of the time I'd say if it's made out of an illusion, it's just more of this organized crime. It's another way to mask what their intentions are. And to me, that's totally fraudulent. And I'm sure most people would agree. Now, We come to a point where something has to be done about it, and it has to be stopped. That's obviously the goal. How we go about that, or how we make that happen, first of all, empowering ourselves financially is going to make a difference for a lot of people, because when people's lives are going better, hopefully they're going to realize that when they've created a different system and it's working, they'll realize that they don't have to change it, and they'll see the fallacy in the other system. And much like the newspapers that you described that are going out of business, I think some of these corporations and some of these bureaucracies within the government have to fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
Any closing comment here, Carl?
No, I look forward to the next show. I'll learn a lot.
Well, I learn a lot, and I'm sure the listening audience does, too. They mention that. You've been complimented by some of the other guests on this show, as well as people that have some of the better research sites around the world. They applaud your work and wish you the best.
I appreciate that, and I just want people to who want prosperity to get a hold of me, and let's try to bring prosperity to your town. It can be done. It really can be done. I just need people who want prosperity, and I will help. I can do it. I know that we can do it in your town, a town between 5,000 and 25,000 people, roughly, and we can bring prosperity. It can be done.
Okay, well, I want to give your websites out, too. The one for posting your tasks in your local area is myclads.com. That's MYCLADS.com. And Do you have a favorite other site you want to give out?
Well, LawMall, LawMall.com, and the first option in the left, the political options are the best. Election-issues-us.com gives my 4 points. Election-issues-us.com is something that will be the 4-point program for bringing prosperity. And you should take a look at that. And really, we can do it. So look at the site, give me a call, and let's start making your town over.
Now, in terms of the videos that you mentioned that you were posting up on YouTube, is it?
Yes. You can find, if you search for CEPERS vid, those are 9 characters. CEP, those are my initials, ERS vid, and that's like a trademark. You'll come up with 29 videos that I've done.
Okay.
Or just search for my name, but it's better to use my trademark. Those are my videos.
By the way, I can post those on my site if you would like me to.
Oh, terrific.
I can do that, and if they ever got taken down off of YouTube for any reason, they would still be up.
Oh, terrific.
So I can post them as independent files, you know.
Oh, terrific. But I'll send you a link to my website. I have my own website has 26 of them, or 27 of them out of 29. I've got to update my own website. I can send you that link, and then you can do whatever you want. But I link to the YouTube videos. I don't separately host them myself.
Okay. Well, I'll be happy to do that.
Terrific.
And,
I appreciate
you send me that.
That
link, and I'll do that.
Terrific.
For you. That's the beauty of computers. You can get a lot done with them if you know how to use them.
Absolutely.
Well, Carl Pearson, I want to thank you very much for being on Evident Footprints tonight, and I look forward to having you on this coming month. And I thank you for staying up so late with your busy schedule to bring this important information to the listening audience. And
I thank you, too, for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure, too. Okay, Carl, you take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Right, good night.
Okay.
Right, bye.
Good night.
Okay.
Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guest, Carl Pearson, spelled P-E-R-S-O-N. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Don Newsom did the sound tonight. Great job tonight, Don. Much appreciated, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow evening when my special guest will be Mr. Greg Pappas. And in the meantime, I wish you, the listening audience, a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.